What if you had a bunch of robots that each paid you $500 a month? What's up, Nick Loper here. Welcome to the Side Hustle Show, part of the Entrepreneur Podcast Network. If you're looking for legit ways to make extra money in your spare time, you are in the right place. And those robots I was talking about, well, it's not sci-fi. They're called vending machines. They've been around for decades. My guest has placed 15 of them over the last few years, generating thousands of dollars a month. And he helps other people do the same to get their first taste of that elusive passive or time-leveraged income from MrPassive.com. Mike Hoffman, welcome to the Side Hustle Show.
Thanks, Nick. Excited to be here and excited to chat today.
And me too. Stick around. In this one, we're covering the location and logistics piece of the vending business, how to get started without a ton of upfront costs, and just general best practices in building out a modern vending route on the side that can pay you every month. So Mike, take me back to the beginning here. You're working 60-hour weeks, bringing home $1,200 a month. That sounds borderline, like probably below minimum wage. You realize something's got to change here. What's going on there?
We were working in collegiate athletics, and we talk about financial freedom and making kind of money without your time. Something had to change because burnout was definitely fast approaching. When I was a young coach, I think I was 23 at the time, I got my first cash flowing rental, like your classic student rental, 70K, rent it for $1,000. And that thing started making me $350 a month of profits. And then I just started parlaying that real estate cash flow into something that led me into vending machines years later.
Okay, starting with the real estate game, and I'm impressed that you're able to save enough down payment on that salary to make the investment property purchase. So why not continue down the real estate path, or looking at a vending machine as like a micro piece of real estate? Like, where does the transition come?
With rentals, I was tired of the 20 to 25% down payment that these banks would require me to do. It just didn't make sense after a while of constantly having to try to find 20 to 25% to put down. So at some point, I needed to find an income stream that required minimal capital, which obviously vending requires very minimal capital compared to real estate. And then the second thing is, real estate isn't necessarily passive. There's definitely things you can do to make it passive with the right property managers and stuff. But if a vending machine goes empty, you're not getting calls like you would when a pipe breaks in the bathroom of your rental. And that's kind of why I made the transition to more vending and things of that nature, that I could make more passive and less urgent.
Yeah, it's an interesting comparison to draw. Like, hey, I was cash flowing $350 a month, but it required this huge down payment. Plus, it's got all this liability. Plus, it's got all this maintenance. And yeah, you got to stock the vending machine. But I imagine one machine in a right location could probably make you $350 a month, like for a much lower upfront cost, just like lower headache involved.
Absolutely. I have vending machines that do more than my rentals, whether that's my long-term rentals or my short-term Airbnbs. Food and water are necessities. And that's why Warren Buffett said his first vending machines when he was a teenager were the best investment he ever made. And he actually regrets selling his vending route when he was young and trying to get a quick buck. But you're spot on with that. And then the risk is way lower. Like, if a vending machine runs out or there's a malfunction, it's not the equivalent of your toilet breaking.
Yeah, that's helpful. Helpful to know. Put it in perspective. So what happens next? So if you're coaching me and I say like, okay, I'm interested, what's my first move? I start looking for apartment buildings, office buildings. I don't even know where to start looking to find a placement.
The first step is like, think of those places you drive by, think of the gym you go to, think of that office building where your bank teller is in the first floor, they got doctor's offices in the second, lawyers in the third, blah, blah, blah. Like anywhere with a lot of foot traffic, and just go start having a conversation. The great thing post-COVID is there's no free refreshments in the lobby anymore. So these robots that you talked about, these vending machines are in a high demand. They want the latest modern machines. They don't want the old school, very cumbersome looking ones you see at the airport that are just getting replaced with nicer luxury amenities.
Yeah. What was it for you? So I like this idea of like pre-selling it first, like before you stock your garage full of machines and snacks, go find a place to put it. What did that conversation look like for you?
Yeah, well, I think the first conversation, which is really interesting, is my background's in human performance and living longer and being healthier. And so I actually went to a couple apartments where there were a lot of athletes that lived at. And I asked the manager, like, hey, do you guys have vending machines? Do you have healthy options? Because I was genuinely worried about the recovery for these athletes with the right nutrition. And they were like, no, Mike, we need vending machines. Can you provide them? And keep in mind, Nick, this is pre-COVID. I didn't even know where to look on Google for vending machines. So I was like, yeah, absolutely, I can do that. So then I just kind of self-figured it out from there.
Yeah, the confidence to say, totally, I could totally do that. Got to go figure that out. Okay, so trying to find kind of like high density populated, either office buildings or residential buildings that don't have something in place already. And the question that comes to mind for me is like, well, why isn't the building owner or the property manager, like, how is nobody else doing this? Like, why aren't they interested in doing it? Why did they say, yeah, can you do that for us?
The biggest answer to that is it's not high enough on the priority of their to-do list. A perfect example of that is I'm talking to Marriott Corporate right now out of the Northeast about doing a potentially large rollout with all of their courtyards across the US and Canada. And they already have these little micro markets in their hotels, but they're tired of the human error element of relying on their staff to restock them, reliant on their staff to do room charges because people have to wait at the front desk. So again, that human error piece to this, where when you come with a proposal, it's like, oh, I can outsource this. I don't even have to worry about it. Because at the end of the day, if you have an empty vending machine or an empty micro market, there's nothing worse than not having it than having it and it's empty. Because now your residents or your tenants expect, hey, I want to go buy and get my energy drink before work today. Well, when it hasn't been stocked for 3 weeks, guess what I'm going to do? I'm going to go to the property manager and complain.
Okay. Your argument is that it's not core to their business.
No.
In the case of the hotels. And so they're just like, who cares about selling a $3.50 thing where we're charging $300 a night for the room? Like, it's a distraction. If somebody else could take it off our hands, like, that would be a welcome conversation.
I mean, a perfect example of this is there's a national vending brand that when we started to become a national thing with vendingpreneurs in the community that I got exposed to, and we were taking a lot of their business. And I was like, I wonder why these locations you mentioned with the high foot traffic, why they're not happy with these guys. Well, these guys got into food catering too. So they were doing vending and food catering. So think of a senior citizen center. If I'm a vending company coming in and I'm also providing all of the Pepsi or soda kegs for the cafeteria, all the food for the cafeteria, do you think I'm really focused on the vending machine down in the hallway that just needs a top off with snacks that might do $1,500 a month, where this cafeteria is going to blow through $1,500 of product a day?
Okay. Okay. So you get your first yes from this apartment building, this athlete or student apartment building. And then you start looking around, well, how am I going to get a machine? Walk me through what happens after that.
I literally Googled vending machines. You kind of got two routes here. You got you go down the used path, look on places like Marketplace and Craigslist and even local refurbished type places, like appliance type places. And then you got these new places. And the best analogy I would use is a new vending machine manufacturer is very similar to a car dealership. So I called them up. They're like, all right, Mike, the machine you want is going to be about $5,500. Do you want to pay for it up front or do you want to finance it with zero money down? And I was like, okay, tell me about your financing options. We're like, oh, we can do it over 60 months. You can use profits to pay them off early. And every single one now I've financed with zero money down. And I typically have them paid off in the first year just with profits.
Okay. And that's like the real estate mindset of leveraging other people's capital versus coming up with 100% down payment.
Yeah. And this is back to the, like, when I bought that 100 grand house, I had to put 20% down, and that just wasn't sustainable every single rental. So this is where with vending, I just bought 18 grand worth of vending machines, I think in October, and I didn't put a dollar down.
And the benefit there is that you got something brand new, because I'm on Facebook Marketplace, of course, like, well, shoot, what's available near me?
Yeah.
From the $500 to $1,000 range, it looks like, for some drink machines. Okay, a little bit more than that for like the combo machines or the snack machines. I don't know how old they are. I don't know if they have card readers, but there's options if you want to minimize the upfront sticker price of these things too.
There's definitely options. I got my first machine used and then it broke after 6 months. And I was like, I never want to do that again. I don't want to be a machine mechanic. None of that stuff. I just want this thing running.
Are they like relatively reliable? Like, to what extent do you have to know the fixing game, or do you have a go-to vending machine fixer person that you can call, like, if something does break?
Yeah, that's why. So ever since that first one I got off Craigslist broke, I've only bought new ever since. And so they're under warranty. So if anything were to ever, I mean, you got to keep in mind, these things have been around for decades. So they're built to last. I mean, we're talking 20 years plus. So they constantly are built to be robust and to be used. So if I ever have an issue, because mine are under warranty, I just FaceTime them when I'm at the machine. They do their little troubleshooting thing. If there's any issues, they just overnight me a part. And like I said, I don't want to be the mechanic.
Yeah, that becomes a little bit less passive at that point. Yeah,
exactly.
So walk me through the math here. So new machine, 5,500, you're financing that over a period of several years. What's the typical payment?
Typical payment is right now with interest rates are around 170 bucks a month. Your first payment isn't due until 90 days after it's installed on site. So you're going to do 90 days of revenue before your first $170 payment's due. And then it's $170 a month typically. And that's just based on today's rates of, let's just say, 8 to 9%. I don't know. I have one.
Sure, sure.
Yeah, 4 years ago that my payments are $112. So they're definitely a little variable there. And then yeah, you can just use profits to pay those off. Of those machines I just used as an example that are 170 bucks a month, I mean, we had one in January that just did over $1,500.
Okay, $15 in revenue minus your cost of product. You aim for a 3x markup? Like stuff in vending machines, it's not cheap.
Exactly.
Like you pay for the convenience.
Yep. So typically we'll be around 35, 40%. So let's just shoot high on expenses. Let's say 40% of 1500 bucks. So what's that? $650, $700 in cost of goods.
Okay. So we'll call it $800 in profit on that $1,500 a month.
Yep.
Okay. Yeah. Minus your $170 in payment and you're still in the black pretty healthily and you pay it off faster if you don't like paying interest and you can parlay that into the next machine, next location. Okay. So you're starting to see how this can work out and you have so far minimized your overhead. Anything else that would go into that? Like, do you have to pay electricity or do you have to pay a percentage to the plate, to rent this little 6 square foot place in their building or something?
I hire someone to stock the machine. So if anyone needs to place an ad on Craigslist, you can place a job ad under gigs. So it doesn't matter if they stock in the morning or night because they're a night owl. It doesn't matter. They just need to do it, let's say, once a week. And that's about 20 bucks an hour. So let's just say $30 a week, even though it takes a half hour to stock a machine. So let's just say 20 bucks for easy math. So we got 20 bucks an hour. That's 80 bucks. So you got $700 in COGS, $170 machine payment. And then if you don't want to stock yourself and you want to make it truly passive, you're going to spend another $80 to $100 for someone to stock that machine.
Gotcha. Yeah. And then lather, rinse, repeat as many times as you can or as many locations as you can find. More with Mike in just a moment, including the minimum occupancy threshold you want to look for when scouting for locations and where he gets the actual products for the vending machines. Right after this. If you travel a lot for work or for vacation, you might be familiar with that feeling you get knowing you're leaving your space unused for long periods of time and you're still paying for that privilege. But hosting on Airbnb means you don't have to leave your home sitting empty when you're away. Being an Airbnb host isn't just a way to earn some extra cash. It's a chance to share your space and make a guest's vacation all the more memorable. You might be thinking, maybe my place isn't the right fit, but don't write it off just yet. Your potential Airbnb might be right in front of you. Whether it's a spare room or even your entire home, there's an opportunity waiting. Airbnb turns your home into a practical and even profitable venture. We just got back from a family trip to Hawaii where we stayed in a great Airbnb, but our place back home could have been a highlight to somebody else's travels, and we could have used the extra cash to help pay for the trip. So if you're curious about hosting on Airbnb, find out how much your space could be worth by visiting airbnb.com/host. Once again, that's airbnb.com/host.
For brands in the digital age, content is the customer experience. That's why industry leaders like KFC, MailChimp, and BMW rely on the Contentful Composable Content Platform to easily create, collaborate, manage, and deliver content across all channels, resulting in meaningful customer experiences and significant business results. Ready to maximize your content's potential? Get started at Contentful.com. Contentful, where content drives business momentum.
And you're up to 10, 15 at this point?
Yep. And added other kind of back to the modern thing of what people want to fill occupancy, whether that's offices getting people back in the door for work and away from the remote life, or whether that's these luxury apartments. You've probably seen them way up there, just being built with all these crazy amenities from saunas to outdoor pools and everything in between. We've added cold brew machines now. We've added micro markets, which look like unattended self-checkout 7-Elevens on site. So that's kind of the parlay thing there, where now instead of just the candy bar, the soda, and the vending machine, now you can start adding things like toilet paper. You can add things like phone chargers. You can add things like subs and salads. And now our average transaction value just went from $2 to $3 to $12 to $15.
Well, with each of those, and now you got to worry about like food spoilage and turnover and stuff, where it's like, yeah, it's less of an issue with a candy bar or a bottle of water or something. Because I've seen these at the airports where it's like several racks of different products, and then there's no checkout person, just like self-honor system, like self-checkout. There's enough people walking by to prevent theft or security cameras. Like, do you find that inventory shrinkage is an issue here?
Nowadays, with some of these cameras, so all those will have cameras that you were at, but these cameras now will alert you if you grab an item. And like, there's AI and machine learning cameras now that if you don't grab that item and go over to the kiosk, it'll actually shout out something out of the camera to you, like almost like a horn of like, hey, you didn't pay for your item. And now you're sitting in the terminal of the airport and everyone's staring at you shoplifting. So there's there's all kinds of things. And then the other side is like a lot of these, where it's going now is like that cooler you grab that Dr. Pepper out of, it's going to have cameras built inside of the cooler. So if you take out five Dr. Peppers, you don't even have to scan it anymore. It'll just, because there's a lock to get open the cooler. So when Nick comes by that cooler, he has to put his credit card to unlock the door. And then if he takes five Dr. Peppers, he doesn't have to scan on that lock. He can just grab them and it's going to charge that, because of the cameras, we'll use machine vision and calculate that you just took five Dr. Peppers. So we see this all the time with like drunk college students where we have these modern coolers. They'll like think they're 2 a.m. having the munchies and getting away with taking 20 things. And we're talking $90 to $100 transactions.
They wake up next week and they find the transaction charge.
Yeah. Like all those bags of chips they just thought they snagged when they were hammered are now they're paying for it.
Okay. So getting a sense of, well, what demographic do I want to target here? Yes. Yeah. Impulse purchases late night. Okay. With the protections in place to prevent the shoplifting. So,
yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
I can picture like a senior center down the road from us. There's got to be some nearby apartment buildings. How do I find the decision maker there? What does that like initial conversation look like? What's my opener?
It's super easy. I think the first thing is the examples you just rattled off. So a senior center and let's say an apartment complex, the thing they all have in common is they have a front desk person that works there. So you can just roll right in there. They're not going to know you from anyone else. And you can just say, hey, is your general manager or your property manager in today? And if she's like, oh, no, you can always ask for the business card and send an email. But yeah, that's exactly what I did that first location I landed. I was like, hey, is your manager in? And she happened to be in. She's like, oh, my gosh, coming with COVID, we can't put out refreshments, blah, blah, blah. We want to move forward. It's just such a low barrier to entry by just doing that pop in.
Your ask was like, tell me about your current vending situation? Like, what's that line?
Yeah. Or just like, do you want to provide modern amenities? And then you just start asking questions about foot traffic to qualify them. So how many people live here or how many units are here? And they'll say, okay, Nick, there's 200 units. And then you're like, okay, well, how many people live in those units? Because some might be two or three bedroom. They're like, oh, 400 people. Like right away, you're sitting on a 1500 to two grand gold mine just with that.
Is there a minimum residency or occupancy that you're looking for?
Yeah, we like to target 100 units as a minimum or 100 plus employees.
Okay. 100 residential units or 100 employees. Mm-hmm. It's hard to imagine an office building without this in there already, but you're finding like this building has been here for 25 years. No one has ever asked us about vending before. You know, that's a great idea. Like, does that happen?
All the time. And in fact, what you'd be really surprised about is we're taking over a lot of the market. So current user, let's say that location, they probably already have vending machines that aren't being stocked because the baby boomer generation doesn't use a cell phone. The only way they can track inventory is driving by the property where like on my phone across the country, I can look at all my vending machines, even my micro market in Philadelphia and see what I've done in sales in the last hour. So then I can get ahead of what needs stocked before it actually shows up empty customer facing. Of like, okay, we've sold 8 out of 10 salads. We have 2 left. We need to backfill those salads. Where right now these places we're taking over for, they either have vending machines that are broken. They have vending machines that don't allow credit card usage. Well, guess what? 80% of your sales are going to be with card, not cash anymore.
Yeah. So it's not so much that they have never considered vending. It's that their existing provider is not living up to expectations or could be doing better.
Yeah. It's like either that existing provider took on a bigger, let's say the Coke provider of Washington has vending as a side service. Well, is that Coke provider more worried about topping off the cafeteria with Coke in the school, or are they more worried about the teacher's lounge vending machine?
Did you give any thought to buying a route that already existed as a way to kind of jumpstart this? I can see how that would appeal to people, but I can also see like, well, there's a lot of sweat equity to be had in just like doing the cold calls and making a few placements yourself.
Yeah. So I'm always looking for good deals when it comes to buying routes. I have a student that started in my like vendingpreneur community where I help people get going last January, and he went from 0 machines to 20 machines. And about half of those came from buying routes for sale. And the other half came from finding leads, sending cold emails, getting a response kind of on repeat. So I see both sides of it. The hard part you need to be careful of is don't get caught up in how many machines are part of that sale or how many locations they have vending machines in. You want to focus on revenue per machine, because that's where I would rather get one senior center that's doing $1,000 a month than 5 machines at 5 Jiffy Lubes doing $1,000 total a month.
Fewer stops, like fewer places to restock, like less headache to manage.
Higher revenue. Yep.
Gotcha. And then if they're like really low revenue, if you're like, oh, the location looks kind of good, but why is the revenue so low? Is it stocked all the time? Does it have a card reader? Like you start to kind of go through, like, could this be an undervalued asset versus like, if I was to put in a more modern experience, would it still be $100 a month or would it be $700-$800 a month? Like I could see how you could do some forced appreciation or forced improvement to these locations.
Even just little things like adding a credit card reader, or instead of 12-ounce sodas, now you're charging bottles of soda, and instead of 12-ounce LaCroix, you're doing 16-ounce Monsters. Like people will pay $4 for a Monster, but you're going to get lucky to get more than $1 for that LaCroix. So just like even product tweaks are going to increase your revenue somewhere 4x.
On the product side, do you need a special reseller's license, or can you just like roll up to Costco and say, okay, I'm just going to stock from what they have here?
You can totally roll up to Costco or Sam's Club, or like out here on the West Coast, you got Winco or just some of those like familiar kind of bigger chains, US Foods, for example. And then as far as like a reseller's permit, every place is different. In Oregon, we're pretty lucky, but like I do have some of my peers down in like LA County where they need a city and county type permit. It's not hard. I mean, you just have to fill out a form and then it gets taken care of.
Okay. I feel like maybe there's like some sales tax exemption or something.
There is. Yep.
Yeah. Because it's like, well, that's like 10%. It's like, Oregon, it's significant margin wise.
Yep. Yeah. So you get exempt from sales tax.
Okay. And then on the product mix, you mentioned a few of these that are hot sellers. Anything else that's like surprised you that it's like, dang, I didn't know that this would fly off the shelves once we put it in?
Yeah. In fact, there's actually a real world example we're going through right now. And so last week we put in these things called wrap snacks, and I had never heard of them until one of our students in South Carolina put me onto them. These things are like wrapper snacks. I've never even opened a bag before, but I mean, we get them for, I think, $1.23 from Sam's Club, and they're literally selling off the shelf for $3.50 like hotcakes. So 67% margins.
Okay. Wrap snacks available at Walmart, Target, Amazon near you. I just had to look those up. I never heard of this. So I'm looking.
Wrap snacks, like trolley gummy worm, like a lot of these, if you think of what I call movie theater candy. So a lot of these like big bags of candy you see almost like king size at the movie theater. So trolleys, gummy worms. I mean, you're getting massive margins and increase. Trolleys, $1.30 from Costco selling for $4. All kinds of like random Pop-Tarts you can get for in ramen noodles and Pop-Tarts we get for 24 cents at Costco. We sell them for $1.50, and we're going through boxes of 48 of them.
Yeah. So you're kind of in that 3 to 6x markup.
Yeah, exactly.
Depending on what it is. Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah. On a on a per sale basis. You can see how it's really strong. We had a dude doing ice vending, and his unit costs were nothing. Like, you're bringing like tap water and like filtering it through this machine. It's like, oh yeah, sell it for $4 a bag. Like, yes, that's yeah. an amazing, amazing margin. So not quite that good, but still pretty strong. Yeah, I'm a human performance optimization coach. I'm selling a king size thing of Sour Patch Kids. Like, how does that align? I mean, you got to go where the demand is. You got to give people what they want. But at the same time, it's like, you really ought to have some kale in your life or something, sir.
I love this topic because it's like human psychology 101. So when we started, like, that machine that's doing $1,500 a month, when we started pre-COVID with that machine, I had this vision of like Clif bars, protein shakes, like Muscle Milk, LaCroix, like no sodas, no candy bars, no Snickers, no Reese's. And the thing was doing like $300 to start. And then you start weaving in like the give and the take. So for like every bag of trolleys, if they buy a Muscle Milk with that, like that's a win, because previously they were buying a Monster. So like now we're doing a lot of these like Celsius and Alani's instead of like your Red Bull and your Monster and your Rockstar. So habits don't change overnight, but you got to start somewhere. Even with our salads, like right now we're trying to really double down on these healthy options. And so, you know, we put salads in the market. It catered towards the people that are used to eating salads. But Nick, you also have the people that are like in the middle that they just want a sandwich. So now we're doing like these healthy sandwiches that is way healthier than them going across the street to Chick-fil-A or just grabbing chips and a candy bar. So it's like that, you got to meet them in the middle until you can bring them all the way over.
Did you have to find a special vendor for that, like fresh food items, the sandwiches, salads? That's got to be, I imagine, pretty locally dependent to stock that.
You'd be surprised, like Taylor Farms, if you go to Costco or Sam's Club or any big grocer, like you'll get a lot of the Taylor Farms like bags of salad. So you can actually go to Taylor Farms' website and type in your zip code and it'll be like, find Taylor Farms salads near me. And there'll be like 5 to 6 different options of places you can source things. But my kind of long-term vision is I want local producers of everything. Like, I have a group out of Bend I came across that is building energy drinks. So now I'm like, oh man, I would love to add them in instead of Celsius because it's a local brand, or like cold brew. I'd love like a local cold brew manufacturer, like whatever kind of coffee roaster. But that's my long-term vision, is everything is sourced locally and healthy.
Yeah. Even I think there's a big opportunity like in non-food products. You want some vending machine inspiration, like go to Japan. They got like vending machines for everything.
Everything.
And we saw, I remember it was up at 5 a.m. cause like with my then 3-month-old because of jet lag. I'm like, oh, let's strap into the Ergo. We'll go for a walk. Oh, iced coffee vending machine for 100 yen. It's like $1. Like, sign me up for that. And we saw like Lego vending machine, like huge footprint on this thing, but like a Lego kit vending machine in the airport. And so it's like, instead of a $3, $4 transaction, it's like, it could be like a $70 transaction. And it's probably some licensing required from Lego in that case. But like other things that you might be able to put in there, depending on location and demand, beyond just snacks and food, just like to get to gears turning there.
Yeah. The Lego one fascinates me because you think of that family that's just trying to get their kids through the next flight. And like, there's one in O'Hare in Chicago that's a Lego machine. And I looked at it one time and I was like, man, people will pay $60 for a Lego set just to keep their kids like occupied, distracted on a 3-hour flight. Like, talk about an impulse buy or whatever. That's what kind of blew my mind. But I mean, even when you go through the airport now, a lot of these like Apple stand-ups or a lot of these like sound and headphone stand-ups, I mean, you can buy pods like what I'm wearing right now. You can buy these AirPods out of vending machines. You can buy literally whatever. A vending machine is going to be safer than a retail place when it comes to theft. That's why I envision like a lot of these places that are dealing with a lot of theft, like LA and stuff. Who knows? Maybe these retail shops like Lululemon are going to start selling their t-shirts out of a vending machine because they're just going to prevent all the like break-ins and stuff that are happening.
Yeah, safer than having cash in the till.
Yeah.
Protect your employees.
Front-facing store with glass windows, you know, all that.
More with Mike in just a moment, including the hidden upside of building a vending business, how to mitigate your risks, and what's surprised him the most on his vending journey so far, right after this. One of the toughest parts about starting and growing your business is figuring out how to build relationships. As you know, people are more likely to buy from and do business with people they know, like, and trust. But when it comes to networking, where do you start? And what if you're more introverted like me? What if you're more wallflower than social butterfly? Well, there's a recent episode of a great podcast called This is Small Business that walks you through how to figure this stuff out. The episode is called How Networking Can Help You Build and Grow Your Business. And inside, you'll learn practical tips on how to build business relationships that don't feel so transactional. A couple parts I liked in particular were how to break into those tight little circles at networking events where you're kind of standing around awkwardly on the outside, and then what you should say in a follow-up email to somebody that you meet there. This is Small Business answers a ton of these questions that all entrepreneurs have, like how to use social media to grow your business, how to find your ideal price point, how to know when you're ready to launch your product, and tons more. So give it a follow. This is Small Business, an original podcast from Amazon, wherever you listen to podcasts. On this show, we're all about the side hustles to earn a little extra income on the side. What if I told you there's a way to earn extra with barely any effort? Listen up, because now you can when you get the U.S. Bank Business Altitude Power World Elite MasterCard. It earns 2x points on whatever you're buying for your business, as well as a 75,000 point bonus. Just spend $10,000 on the account owner's card in the first 120 days of opening your account. There are no categories to remember or hoops to jump through. Just use the card for all your business purchases and earn 2x points with no limits, caps, or expiration. It's a simple way to put some power into your business expenses. It's the U.S. Bank Business Altitude Power Card. Power, see? It's right there in the name. So get the side hustle with some muscle with the card that puts more point earning power in your pocket. Apply for the U.S. Bank Business Altitude Power Card today at usbank.com/bizpower. That's usbank.com/bizpower, B-I-Z, power. Limited time offer. The creditor and issuer of this card is U.S. Bank National Association, pursuant to a license from MasterCard International Incorporated. MasterCard is a registered trademark, and the circle's design is a trademark of MasterCard International Incorporated. Some restrictions may apply. So who's on the team now? As you mentioned, I found a stalker person, $20 an hour on Craigslist gigs. What else is going into this, like, management logistics wise? Does he or she come by and grab the product from you, from some central warehouse? How does that all work?
Yeah. So when I first got going, before, when I just had a couple locations, I had a little kind of storage thing in the garage. And then I eventually evolved that into like a landscaping garage shed that you can get from Costco. So I had that right on the side of the house. So like I was literally, Costco boxes come in, I just carry them over to the garage shed and put them in there. And then when he comes by every Monday to stock, he would just grab the inventory, and he's tracking the inventory on his phone, so he knows exactly what he needs to get. Bada boom, bada bing. And then he's off. The other side of this that I'm really kind of doubling down is like lead finding. I've built an in-house cold calling team that I help my other vendingpreneur students grow their route. So we're constantly dialing into both my leads, but also their leads, circling back with people, because vending is not a priority. So you just got to stay on their radar. And we see it all the time where like someone pops their head up after 12 months of emails and they're like, oh, we're ready for a vending machine. I'm always like, well, you didn't respond to my emails for 12 months. What was the cause? They're like, oh, we had the ice storm here in Oregon, and someone came to the front desk and complained that we didn't have anything on site for them. And now it's like, oh, okay. They Googled these emails that were in their inbox and or searched these, you know, and now they want a vending machine. So you never know with life what happens. So we
just, yeah, your name is top of mind. You thought that was a completely dead lead.
Exactly.
But you were planting the seeds like, oh, you know, I'm going to associate whenever that need arises. I know who to call. Yeah, that makes sense. So are you actively trying to place more machines locally? You mentioned like, so you got the local stuff in Oregon and then you got the micro market in Philadelphia, I think you said. It's interesting because I would have thought this would have to be super localized just from the logistics, like stocking standpoint.
Yeah. Yeah. So we actually found our stocker in Philadelphia off TaskRabbit, which we don't even have locally here in Eugene. But my goal is to stay more local. Obviously, this was a lead, the micro market that came through for a completely different location. I didn't have a vendingpreneur in that market yet. So that's why I took this remote opportunity on. Typically, yeah, I stay locally. And then we have vendingpreneurs all over the country that we're helping, that are going after their own side hustles wherever they live with their own vending routes.
Okay. So cold calling other places locally, trying to expand. Is that accurate?
Absolutely. Yep.
I'm like looking around. I'm like, shoot, because it seems like a cool gateway business for, especially for kids to get involved with. Like they could see like physical inventory. It's stuff that they already like, candy and snacks and chips and stuff. And to be able to kind of like touch and feel it versus completely online stuff. I don't know. That's an interesting one. Like, well, shoot, you get me interested in it. And the other interesting aspect is we mentioned there are routes for sale. I've been trying to come up with like a, what's the difference between a side hustle and a second job? And the equity piece may be the biggest differentiator. He says, yeah, I'm working for profits, but I'm also working for ownership and equity in this route. It's like for every $500 a month I can add to the bottom line is, what do these things trade at? Like 2x multiple or something on profits?
On total revenue. Absolutely. So
2x on revenue.
On total revenue. Okay. So for example, that $1,500 a month machine, that one machine, that's 18 grand a year in revenue, right? Well, I could turn around and sell that machine for 36K.
Wow.
That asset piece of this, people don't even think. And you think of like all of the private equity groups that were snatched, the like Cody Sanchez-y type, she talks about a lot, and like Nick Huber around like storage and HVAC and plumbing, small mom and pop companies being consolidated by private equity. I think in the next year to 5 years, you're going to see that in vending because the cash flow is so stable and consistent that it's just on auto. Like I can predict within $150 every month what each machine will do because it's food and water. Like people need it to live.
Yeah, it becomes kind of a habit.
Exactly.
Get something out of the thing.
Yeah. Exactly. Kind of back to the equity piece. People don't even think about that. And then I love your comment about the kids because I'm so bullish about this with my two daughters. And yeah, granted, one's 4.5 months and one's going to be 3 this summer. So they're very super young to this. But there's no easier way to teach supply and demand and economy 101 than a vending machine to your kids. Like, think about it. Jason, the guy I was talking about earlier with, he bought 2 routes and he's up to 20 machines now. He literally has 4 kids and each one has their own machine they own, and they have say on what they want to price, what they want to put in it. And it's like created this whole like family competition of machine's doing better. And I mean, every one of those kids now has a college fund that's just monthly building.
Yeah, that's awesome. That's a cool way to do it. All right. we'll figure out how to make this happen. What are we missing? We haven't really talked about any sort of risks, liabilities, like ranging from a product defect, food poisoning, I don't know, or like the machine, like somebody tips it over and breaks their leg. Or what am I not thinking about on the risk side?
The risk with regards to liability is you can cover that with insurance. Like we have general, one of the things I always recommend is all these vendingpreneurs get their general insurance and all the kind of parameters and certificate of insurance for the locations and things like that. I think the bigger risk is those people that...
Would you consider like that general liability policy like route-wide or is like per machine, per location?
Yep, route-wide. And then you might have to... Okay. Some properties might ask for like a COI with that specific address, or you just have the general kind of umbrella policy for everybody. And then I think the bigger risk is this market is going to be flooded here. I firmly believe in the next two... It's like e-com from 10 years ago. Those that have started building their routes and have more seasoned routes are going to get ahead of those people jumping into the market in the next 3 years. Like you better take, if we look back on this episode in 2026, those that got in 2024 are going to be way better off than 2026 because there's only so many locations, right? And I think right now, if you're not keeping your machine stocked, people are coming after your location. So that's the biggest risk is like, quality customer service.
And now you're sitting with a machine that you're like, oh crap, what do I...
Yeah.
No, I got to find a new home for it.
Exactly. And you got young entrepreneurs now that don't trust the stock market. They don't trust the real estate market because they don't know what's happening with rates or prices or blah, blah, blah. So now they're like, well, I want to do what Mike did. It's just going to accelerate and accelerate. That's why if you get in it now, I think the multiple to buy a route is probably 2x revenue. Well, I know it is, but I think it could get up to like 4x in the next 2 years.
Is it typical to lock in some sort of exclusivity contract? Like, hey, this is a 2-year term. We'll be the exclusive vending provider for this location, like to prevent you from getting kicked out or usurped by the next guy who calls them up?
Absolutely. Yeah. Typical. Our standard agreements are 3 years.
Okay. Okay. So you write that up.
And we have a couple that are 5-year agreements. If they didn't ask, like we'll push for 5 years and then see if they push back and want to go to a 3 or 1 year agreement.
Okay. What's going to separate you from somebody who's cold calling these places who hasn't listened to this episode? Like, how can you stand out in terms of professionalism and just like, how are you going to get the gig versus some other random person?
I think the way to stand out is to really play the amenity game. Don't even say the V word. Don't bring up vending. Play the amenities. People love luxury, modern amenities. So if you say the V word, they're going to think of that traditional machine from the airport from 20 years ago, where if you bring up the amenity word, they're going to bring up the what they saw in the terminal, Nick, the shelves with the self-checkout kiosk that looks like a mini 7-Eleven they can put next to their fitness center.
I like that. That's a good tip. Thanks for sharing that.
Of course.
What surprised you the most over the last few years? Is it the stuff that people buy? Is it the locations that have been a hit? Is it, I don't know, I'll leave that open-ended, but any crazy surprises?
I am surprised at how consistent a cash flow it is. Like, I was kind of surprised at how you have a better chance of predicting your vending income for next month than you do of the person paying rent next month on time. The predictability is like so spot on compared to some of my real estate income streams and even like my Bitcoin mining and things like that. It's just so stable and consistent. The other side of it is it's a pure numbers game. That's what I love about it, is like, it's not get rich quick. So people that are like going to do one pop in and think like at the end of the day, if you do 10 pop ins and you get 3 out of 10, it's just like baseball. You're an all-star for that batting average. So that's kind of the goal, is the long game and getting to the masses.
Is there a rule of thumb for how many conversations you need to have before you get a yes? Or like, it sounds like it was pretty quick for you, but yeah. I don't know if that's the case with your students.
I don't think there's that many conversations needed. If you hit that sweet spot where they already have a vending machine and it's not working, they want your service now because they got residents complaining about the current vending provider. Or if you hit the sweet spot of the new build that's like, I want modern, aesthetically pleasing looking machines and not traditional vending, and you're leading with the A word, like that is where you're going to be the shoe-in favorite.
Okay, you get something that's like in the new construction or very fresh build phase where they don't have an existing provider.
Yeah.
And then just on the delivery, like I'm just imagining like how big and heavy and bulky these things are. Like with the new purchase, like financing deal, yeah, I guess I could just request that they deliver it to the place that I've already signed up. But if you're buying used, I got to find a friend with a pickup truck. I got to figure out how to move this thing. Like, have you run into issues there?
We definitely had, I had to move the machine that I got that broke. I had to move it out, and it was a total, I mean, they're 700 pounds. It wasn't like you just get a little dolly and out the door you go. There's definitely some maneuvering around, pallet jack type stuff. If you get a new machine, you get it delivered to the location. That's best case scenario. And then the other case is like,
Hopefully it stays there for 3 to 5 years.
Yeah. If you get a used machine, you have them try to deliver it and pay an extra $100. But if not, I would totally hire someone on like Craigslist Gigs or something, or TaskRabbit to do that. It'd totally be the $150, $200 tab, be worth it to do that instead.
Yeah. A recent guest in the furniture flipping niche recommended a service called Lug, L-U-G-G. I don't know if they move anything that heavy, but she was using them to move furniture around the city. So for what's worth, we'll throw that out there.
I've never heard of that.
Yeah. Lug, L-U-G-G.
Okay.
When you're leading with the amenities conversation, the locations, they're not necessarily asking for a piece of the pie. Is that on their radar? Or is that something that people ask for? Like, I want 25% of your sales or something.
It's not on their radar unless you're kind of dealing with that probably class C or D type location. You know, if you think of like a Super 8 or even maybe like that oil lube joint that you go pitch, those places, that extra revenue would make a little bit more of a difference. But like these luxury apartments, they're charging a premium to their residents. So they're not trying to, and they're also built by a corporate group. So the local people you're meeting with, they might ask you like, hey, what's your revenue percentage? But the talk track around inflation with cost of goods of like, hey, Nick, you've been to the store recently, you know, avocados are no longer 50 cents, just like all the inventory in this machine we're going to put in. So they don't want you to price jab their residents. So they're not asking for a kickback at all. And if they do, you just ask, okay, great, we can do a revenue share. We'll pass on part of the upfront cost of the machine to you. And they'll be like, well, we don't have a budget for that. So we don't want
revenue share. Okay. So you can get around that. And it's pretty common to not charge like a square footage rent. Like in the example of the ice vending, I think he was paying, oh, I got to pay $50 or $200 a month, like, or something like to have the machine sit in this spot.
No, it's not like kind of the parking lot retail space that the ice machine takes up.
Okay. yeah, hopefully smaller footprint in that case. What's next for you? Where do you want to go with this thing?
I just want to keep kind of building, and the types of vending machines that are being built these days, I'm constantly getting hit up every week about new kind of concepts, like the Lego example we talked about earlier. I think the robotic arm coffee machines out of, you've probably seen them in SFO, but there's constantly new approaches coming that I'm always kind of keeping my ears to the ground on.
Well, very good. You're helping other people get their own vending businesses off the ground at MrPassive.com. We'll link that up in the show notes. You can find Mike over there. Let's wrap this thing up with your number one tip for Side Hustle Nation.
Yeah, Nick, first off, thanks for having me. What a great show, and really exciting to kind of see what you've built here. And then I think the first tip is the people that are hungry and have the entrepreneurial mindset, the persistence, the doing the pop-ins, the people that really stand out are going to be the people that are going to build their routes the quickest.
It's interesting to me, I just some notes and takeaways just around like real estate, location, 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 but drawing that distinction between a 20% down payment for maybe 300, 400, 500 bucks a month if you bought really well in cash flow. And of course, tax benefits, all the other things that come along with real estate. But you being able to generate that cash flow for, in my mind, what seems lower risk, lower overhead, maybe lower headache. And yeah, you got to go stock the thing and hire somebody to do that once the revenue justifies it. But that makes sense. Is there a passive income target that you're shooting for over the next 12 months? Or like, I just want to keep building this thing and see where it goes.
I'm looking at it more like a lot of the other vendingpreneurs in our group around just generational wealth. So kids' college fund, kids' 401k, like I'm just kind of trying to parlay and stack everything for the kids and what they're going to get someday. So yeah, it's that whole generational freedom that I'm really about.
Very cool. Well, MrPassive.com, find Mike over there. It starts with one. I think there's some economies of scale that go with having multiple machines, but it starts with getting that first yes. So I encourage you to go out and see what locations near you might be ripe for a new amenity, better amenities rather than new vending machines. Big thanks to Mike for sharing his insight. I also want to thank our sponsors for helping make this content free for everyone. You can hit up sidehustlenation.com/deals for all the latest offers from our sponsors in one place. And thank you for supporting the advertisers that support the show. It really does make a difference. That's it for me. Thanks so much for tuning in. If you're finding value in the show, the greatest compliment is to share it with a friend. Until next time, let's go out there and make something happen. And I'll catch you in the next edition of the Side Hustle Show. Hustle on.